Part of the reading for this course was Chapter 21 of Walsh's Palliative Medicine, the chapter entitled Euthanasia and Physician-Assisted Suicide. My reason for looking at this chapter at this point, even though we've already looked at the issue of euthanasia, is that it is primarily in contrast to the option of physician-assisted suicide that the real option of palliative care can be best highlighted. And I've assigned the whole chapter as part of the reading, but I'd like to focus in particular on the section labeled Four Assumptions and look at these in particular. Notice that the author has noted that the fundamental problem that one faces is that the public is really not informed on the question of what palliative care is and the basis for the claim that some form of euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide is necessary in order for there to be proper care for the dying. And so the first assumption that the author points out is the correct assumption that some people do in fact die in pain. Some people die an inhumane death. However, this fact is used by individuals supportive of euthanasia and physician-assisted suicide as the fundamental reason why such a thing has to be permitted in society. The second assumption, which is false, is that palliative care is helpless in these cases. And the whole point of this textbook and of this chapter in particular is to highlight the fact that it is incorrect to assume that there is nothing that can be done for those who are suffering pain at the end of life. Inhumane deaths do occur, as the author admits, but they do not have to. Pain and other symptoms, whether it be nausea, restlessness, anxiety, all of these can be handled adequately by specialized palliative care. And in extreme cases, as the author points out, it's possible to give drugs that even in the case where physical or psychological symptoms are not being adequately treated, one can give drugs which reduce consciousness, as the author has pointed, to the point that refractory, that is, symptoms that are not appearing to be treated, are adequately suppressed. And this can be what is called titrated, that is, it can be adjusted to the particular symptoms that the individual is having. One of the common ways of doing this is to allow the amount of medication to be controlled by the patient. This is obviously not the situation in someone who is being kept unconscious, although they can give themselves enough medication that effectively they are not really aware of their surroundings, but then they have to often do something like pressing a button on a control device to increase the amount of medication. But that's not specifically what the author is mentioning. That method that I've just described is in fairly common use. But palliative sedation, which is a deliberate attempt to reduce consciousness in cases where individuals are in intractable pain, pain that otherwise can't be treated, is a very specialized practice. It can be practiced, and again, as we've seen before, treatment of pain in the situation where it is not intended to hasten death is perfectly permissible by the church. So, based on all of this, one can say that if good palliative care is available, there does not need to be suffering at the end of life. However, people are simply not aware of that. The third assumption that we've mentioned before, the problem that the average physician, in fact, does not have the necessary expertise for palliative care. It is not yet generally available. That is, not all people trained, especially in primary care, are skilled at or able to immediately access the resources that they need. Not every hospital has a palliative care team or specialists trained in this, but it is something that is becoming more generally available. So what one wants to do, of course, is to encourage training in palliative care, the availability of it, and the widespread acceptance of this kind of therapy as appropriate for individuals. Unfortunately, this is something which the movement in favor of physician-assisted suicide tends to short-circuit and prevent. And part of the reason that's bound up with this is this fourth assumption, that the unbearably suffering patient is making a free, autonomous choice. The promoters of assisted suicide will claim that palliative care needs to be simply one choice among others, among which assisted suicide should be another. And the point that is made here is absolutely right, and it's been highlighted and documented in numerous studies. A terminally ill patient who suffers intolerable pain and sees no end to the pain will quickly be driven to ask for euthanasia or assisted suicide. If their pain is not treated, people will look desperately for anything that seems to end the pain. This is not, however, a free, autonomous choice. The circumstances themselves are forcing the person to do something, and their own will and convictions, as the author points out, don't really have any influence at all. However, palliative care should be, as the author points out, the active and total standard approach with which medicine and healthcare respond to the terminally ill. It should be a self-evident point of departure. It should be what is always offered rather than one option among many. Otherwise, as the author points out, people will request euthanasia simply because of the shortcomings of the healthcare system. And as we've highlighted elsewhere, even when pain is effectively treated with palliative care, as the author admits, there are still people who will continue to request euthanasia, and this has to do with the fact often that they consider their lives no longer meaningful, or they feel that they are in some sense losing control. And this should be understood properly for what it is, as a psychological issue involving the person's lack of meaning, a sense of the lack of purpose that they have at that moment, but can effectively be addressed, particularly addressed if the individual has some kind of spiritual context with spiritual care, which has to do ultimately with the restoration of meaning or with helping people focus on the possibility of discovering meaning. But the point is made, and this is highlighted in red, regular contact with dying people teaches that only a small minority who request euthanasia belong to these categories. It's only a small number of individuals. Nevertheless, those who advocate for them, and sometimes they themselves, can be very vociferous, can be very loud in attempting to sway public opinion. That is, those who are concerned more with a question of meaning or of control, because the vast majority of people, not these individuals, but the vast majority who request euthanasia, stop requesting it when they receive adequate palliative care. So we have this paradoxical problem that we've mentioned below, that palliative care should be what is offered. When it is offered, there may still be individuals who are afraid of losing control or who have a sense of a lack of meaning. Palliative care or the specific care of their physical symptoms will not address this. And as you may recall, that's something that is particularly emphasized in John Paul II's document and in the magisterial texts on palliative care, that spiritual attention to people's needs is absolutely essential, because it is only in that context that the question of meaning can actually be addressed.